Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my co-hostess Misty Hall and I discuss different issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. My name is Bonnie Kay, and good evening to all, and good evening, Misty. How are you?
Good evening, Bonnie. I'm well. It's hot in Florida, but I'm doing well.
Yes, it's hot all over the country, I think.
I know.
I think it's definitely very hot throughout the country. It's really a bad heat wave. But we're
going
to try to keep cool tonight in our air-conditioned studios. And if people have any questions or they would like to call in and ask us anything or discuss any of the topics that we discussed tonight, please feel free to call our caller number, and I'm going to give it to you so you can get a pencil. It's area code 646-716-4893. I'll repeat that one more time. Area code 646-716-4893. So if you have any questions for me or Misty, or you'd like to make any comments, please feel free to do so. Misty, I'm really excited that you're starting to run your workshops for the summer now. And you have a free workshop coming up, right?
I do. I've had some requests, and I've decided to go ahead and pull one together. I'm doing a free workshop. The topic of it's going to be grief. You know what an important topic that is when you first discover that your husband is gay. And it's also an important topic throughout the journey of rediscovering yourself when you're trying to redefine yourself, figure out what's going on. And grief is one of the largest, I think it's just a really important thing to know about when you make this discovery. I think the more you know about grief, the more prepared you can be to realize what you're going through and to understand it just a little bit better. And the premise behind that is when you understand what's going on, what could be normal, what can be an abnormal part of this process, I think it helps you heal. I really do. And it also helps you realize when you're stuck and when you need to get some type of professional help. So this free seminar, the topic, like I said, is going to be grief. And I'm going to be on for an hour. And I'm going to limit it to 25 participants. So if you want to attend, you need to sign up early. It's for August the 20th, which is on a Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time Zone. And if you want more information, you can email me. My email address is Misty Lynn Hall, and I will spell that, MISTILYNNHALL at AOL.com. And I can give you more information and get you registered. I think it'll be a really good seminar. There's just going to be some general information about how what you can do, what you can expect, and how you can move forward. And also, I have many women that want to, purchase some of the coaching or counseling from me but are just not sure. So I encourage those women to listen in too. It's free. See if you like my style. See if it's something that you think will help you. I welcome you to listen in. Because, what I tell women, help in this type of situation is priceless. I mean, you're really worth it. You're really worth getting the help from someone that understands the situation, that's been through the situation, and that can help you get unstuck and get on that journey that you're meant to be on. And the journey that everyone should have a wonderful life. You really should. Everyone should. So I've been there, done it, and know it's not easy, but I've learned some tips along the way that I think is helpful, so there's no need to reinvent the wheel, as I say, and reach out for help. I think, unfortunately, our culture, Bonnie, and I think you can answer to this too, does not reach out for help sometimes as often, I think, as they should. You know, when you reach out for help, it doesn't mean you're broken. It means you have courage. And
you need to reach out for the right help.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to reach out for the right help because there's a lot of wrong help out there also.
That's exactly where I was moving into. I just got an email this weekend that really bothered me.
Go ahead, talk about it, Missy.
Pardon, I didn't hear you.
But tell us about it.
Okay, I'd love to. I got a comment on my blog from someone, and it was just so disturbing because it's so, that's why I'm doing the work I do. The comment basically said this person had gone, it was an anonymous comment, left the comment that she had gone to counseling several times, and unfortunately, she's just now realizing that it was not helpful and apparently probably damaging, because she trusted that person was a professional therapist, so she trusted that she was going to get the help that she needed. And what basically happened was she doubted herself more, and she got into a trap of being stuck into a relationship longer that was very unhealthy for her. And basically, sometimes therapists out there, and I'm not bashing all therapists, I am a therapist, so I'm not bashing them, but some of them don't understand it. And like, for example, the thing this one anonymous comment left was that brought up that her then husband was, you know, looking at a lot, an excessive amount of gay porn. And a lot of therapists will normalize that. Well, it's normal to be curious. Well, yeah, it can be, but, you know, what happens, it makes the straight wife question herself so much more. And that's the last thing a straight wife needs, because I always tell the women I work with, as you do too, Bonnie, you got to trust your gut, you got to trust your instinct, you got to trust your intuition, whatever it is you want to call it, you've got that sense there. You've got to trust it and believe it. If you go seek out professional help, and they're minimizing what you're saying, they are increasing the doubt in yourself, you really got to step back and look somewhere else. You should never go to a therapist or counselor, any type of mental health person that increases your doubt. This person, this professional should help you, pull you through, and bring you more clarity. You've got to have more clarity in this situation. So, you know, I tell people, and this may sound so silly, it's like buying a pair of shoes. When you go and find a therapist or counselor, any type of professional that's helping you mentally, if it doesn't fit, you've got to take those shoes back and return it. The same thing. You know, go to a therapist, counselor, or mental health professional. You know, you might have to go 2 to 3 times before you realize, because it's very uncomfortable usually the first session, because you're revealing very intimate details of your life, very intimate details. It's hard to do that. So naturally, the sessions are going to be a little uncomfortable, but you should start connecting with that therapist. That therapist, you should feel like they're listening to you, and they should be asking you questions, and that brings you more clarity. To me, that's the essence of therapy, is not to tell you what to do, but to help you find more clarity so you can see the situation better. Because, as you know, Bonnie, I say dancing inside that circle is crazy. When you're involved in a straight gay marriage, I mean, you just dance inside that circle of crazy where you doubt everything. So the last thing you need is increased doubt. And you sure don't want to be paying a professional to increase your doubt. You want someone that is knowledgeable about the process, someone that realizes what's normal, what's not normal to go through when you enter this healing journey. So, you know, it may be hard to find a therapist or mental health professional, but when you find one, it's well worth it. You're worth it. That's something that, you know, if you don't have insurance or you have insurance that doesn't cover it, you know, find one that will take a payment plan. Most of them will. I know I do with the women I work with. You know, it's worth it. You're worth the investment of getting through this, making it out on the other side a better person. And you can do that. With the right help, you truly can do that. And it's, you know, I'm not going to lie, it's not easy. It's really not. It's not an easy journey. But that's why I really recommend to get professional help, because...
I think the problem is, Misty, that we found out that there's a lot of professional help out there that's not very professional.
Unfortunately,
so, there are some of the things. You know, Misty's much kinder than I am. So that's
a little
because she's younger.
Version of body.
You know, you're younger and you haven't been around as long as I have. So I'll cut to the chase.
Okay.
First of all, if you're going to Christian counselors because you're Christian, many of them do not have the right angle on this. Many of them are believing that homosexuality is a choice, and you just have to hang in there with your homosexual husband until he makes the right choice not to be gay. So you can sit for years lingering in self-doubt and wondering when some miracle of God's going to happen that's just not going to happen. But like I say, from a Christian counselor's point of view, when we have Christian women who come to us and they say, well, you know, I think that, you know, the counselor's telling me that because we're Christian, we have to hang into the marriage. It doesn't work that way. Because that marriage is never going to get better, and no matter what that Christian counselor tells you, it's just not going to work. I will say that for those people who are interested in Christian counseling, we were very lucky last week. We had our friend Patsy Ray Gowan here, who is Dawson here, who was starting her own show on Tuesday night, and it's called Embarrass the Alligator on Blog Talk Radio. And, you know, if you need to hear that Christian counseling, that's the woman you should hear it from, because she'll be the first one. She's had over 30 years experience, and she can tell you scripturally that those marriages don't work. Mm-hmm. By the way, we do have a caller. Let's see who's calling and joining us tonight. Hi, this is Bonnie and Misty. Hello?
Hello.
Hi, it's Bonnie and Misty. And who are we talking to?
Can you hear me?
Yes, who are we talking to?
My name is Deb. I just was on the chat, and I was trying to listen to the radio show, but I can't find
sorry,
it on
Deb.
The internet.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to drag you in here if you didn't want to be here.
Oh, that's okay. No, that's okay. I was listening more than anything, but I just turned it on just a few minutes ago through the phone. So.
Oh, okay. And your name came up, and that's why we invited you in. So how are you doing tonight, Deb?
Okay. Okay.
How did you find the chat? Was it helpful for you?
Oh, I think that the website and everything has helped me a lot. I've been crying almost every day, and the more I read, the less I cry, because I realize that what's happened in my life, and it's making sense. And making
it's
sense
like
of it is...
all the puzzle pieces are being put together, right?
Oh, yeah. Big time. Big time. And it's a big help for me. I suppose some people would prefer to never know something like this, and I'm glad I know, and it gives me a pivot point to go forward from. And I know what I need to at least start with anyway.
You know, I always ask women, and we'll ask you also, Deb, if you had the choice to know or not to know, would you rather know?
Oh, definitely no. I could never figure out why I could never please my husband.
Mm-hmm.
I could never really make him happy. And, you know, he always said that I was never exciting enough. I never did anything fun. I never dressed exciting enough for him. He would always put me down. He was very controlling and manipulative.
Mm-hmm.
He cut us off from friends and family early on, and I think that there was a reason for that, is he was afraid other people could see him, because he obviously knew he had me fooled. But
this is a very common ground that a lot of men do. They really try to isolate, you know, their families and move away from unfamiliar things, such as, you know, other family support members or friends. They really try to isolate you because they're so afraid their secret's going to get out, or that you're going to hear their secret. They'll actually move to other parts of the country. You know, all kinds of unbelievable things just to keep you feeling isolated and alone.
What's the chances of him ever coming and admitting this, even if I try and get him to come out about it? What are the chances he will? What are the percentages?
Okay, well, there was a survey that was done, a very objective survey done by several men in England on this, and they surveyed close to, I believe, to 2,000 men, and they asked them, these are all married gay men, how many would actually come out to their wives? And I thought this was the most telling survey because, you know, these guys had nothing to hide. They were being honest. And it was about 35% said that if they had to, they would. And the rest said they probably wouldn't. Like 45% said they definitely wouldn't, and then like another 15% said they probably wouldn't.
So to me, these men are going to continue to hide. They're going to continue to hide either
way.
They
are. And you know what I tell these men, and I'm going to be honest, this is how I talk to the men. Because I have a lot of wonderful men that do come my way who are really struggling with this issue. They don't want to hurt their wives. They don't want to hurt their families. You know, they're in a lot of pain inside. You know, they're not like your husband or, you know, many others that we have in our network. You know, these are really good guys because that's why they're coming to me. You know, if they're really rotten guys, they're not going to come to me.
Mm-hmm.
But the ones who just feel really, you know, torn apart and don't know how to tell their wives, they come to me for advice. And they say, well, maybe we should just leave and not tell our wives why. And I say, you know what, you're coming to me because you tell me you love your wife. The greatest act of love is honesty. You have the obligation to tell that woman who you love and who loves you and has spent all these years trying to please you why she can't. I said, because one of the most important things is if you want the best for her and you want her to find a new relationship, how's she ever going to feel good enough about herself that she failed in a marriage to you to be successful with someone else if she doesn't know the truth?
Right.
Don't you think that's true?
This is where I feel so glad that I know, because I would always say, what didn't I have? What couldn't I do? What was the matter with me? Well, I don't, even though this is really new to me, I don't feel that way anymore. I
mm-hmm.
know. It wasn't me. And I know if he's going to wrestle with this the rest of his life, that's his problem. But I need to find a place, and I have to call my husband out on it. I don't know how, and I don't know
mm-hmm.
when, but I am going to tell him, I know this. I worry about the way to handle it and do it. I don't want to do it because I want to get back at him. I want answers. I want him to answer for a long marriage.
I think that Misty can really also address the fact, Misty, about compartmentalizing marriages. Could you talk a little bit about that?
I say that again. I just heard.
Can you talk a little bit about how these men compartmentalize their marriages?
Oh, absolutely. This is very unfortunate, but this is so common. I've experienced it and worked with a lot of women that's gone through this, actually most of the women. Unfortunately, some of these men, or most of these men, gay men that marry straight wives, a lot of them, number one, don't identify with being gay. They deny it. The few that do identify usually define themselves as being bisexual because it seems to be easier to say you're bisexual than gay in this culture. And most often, I hear the story over and over, and it was a story that my ex-husband sort of led up to. He would say, and a lot of the other stories I hear were that if they're married to someone, you know, they say they love their wife, but yet a lot of them do not consider it cheating because they say they're not going out with another woman or having sex, affair, or relationship with another woman. So they don't see it as, a lot of them don't see it as doing anything wrong and use it as a form of justification because it's with a man. So I find it very interesting. It's a story that I hear very often. It's very, very common. So they compartmentalize basically their life, their marriage.
Uh-huh.
They consider it a marriage and them not doing anything wrong because it's not with a woman, which to me, it doesn't matter man or woman. If
no.
you break those vows, because I took the vows of my marriage very, very serious. I consider them sacred. And I don't care who you break those vows with, man or woman, if they're broken, they're broken. So,
yeah.
you know, unfortunately, a lot of them find ways to compartmentalize. I've also heard stories such as a lot of the women I work with, their husbands travel. And they've told some of the women, well, you know, I'm not going out on you because I only do this when I'm away traveling. I don't do it when I'm at home.
That's
so, you know,
just denial to me.
Yeah, absolutely. You
well,
know,
it's justification.
You know, there's always a story.
Mm-hmm. I think it's justification more than denial. And the thing is that even though Misty says that infidelity is infidelity, I don't think I separate infidelity from sexuality. because this isn't just about infidelity. This is about living a lie with someone, not being honest with them, turning their lives upside down. Look how you felt all these years, Deb, because you felt you were failing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in a straight, if you had a straight husband, at least he could appreciate you for being a woman. Even if you have fights, even if things go up and down, even if you have hard times, you have good times again, you can pull together as this straight, straight team. But when you have a straight and a gay in a marriage, it's not mixing. So that gay man feels trapped in that marriage, and he takes his feelings of feeling trapped out on you.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than being honest with it, as some of these gay husbands will never be honest, you know, they'd rather sit and torture you and make you feel responsible for the failures of the marriage. And to me, that is not love. That is pure selfishness.
The
How
part
do you do
that
to somebody that you love?
The part I don't get about this is you give up a home, a family, a relationship, and you know, a sacred to the day you die relationship for sex. I don't get this at all. I'm having a hard time understanding that.
Well, I will tell you this much, Deb. It's not just about sex. And it's about who a person is internally. And I guess it's like, you know, people are born the way they're born. When they grow up, they're socialized to be different. You know, they're taught from an early age that homosexuality is evil. If, you know, if you grow up in a Christian kind of community, you're taught that, you know, you go to hell for that. So you get all these messages from the time you're growing up that, you know, homosexuality is bad. And depending on how many messages you get, I guess it depends on how you react to it. And for those men who just feel that sense of loathing or self-hatred inside because they can't come to terms with it, they're hoping if they fall in love with a woman, and some gay men can perform with women, you know, early in the marriage or even later in the marriage. They can heterosexually perform sex. It doesn't mean they want to, or it doesn't mean they're really enjoying it, but they can do it. Not all gay men can, but some can. So they're hoping against hope that if they can perform, you know, sex, they can love their wives, and those feelings will go away. But they never do.
See, now,
you know,
my husband,
that's not who they are.
Was the type to put pornography, women, in front of him. And I began, in the last 3 to 4 years, when I said, we can't be married this way anymore. Something's wrong with our marriage.
Mm-hmm.
I started to see his porn change, and it became excessive. Well, I think he couldn't feel any attraction for any kind of female anymore, is what I've become to believe. Now, maybe I'm wrong. I also saw the porn became transsexuals. Then the porn became looking at Craigslist, looking at men for men. And so that's what I've seen. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Why would he look at porn with women in it? Did he think that if he forced himself to look at this and stay married to a woman that he could be normal?
That could be part of it. And when you're saying he's looking at, you know, porn with women, were there both women and men in it together?
I don't know, because I didn't really want to, you know,
I know some gay men who really prefer to watch straight porn. And the reason why they prefer it is because they imagine themselves in the role of the woman, you know, when they're watching straight porn. They much prefer watching that than gay porn. So I always tell my women, you just can't go by the fact that they're watching straight porn, because some of these guys fantasize that that's, you know, the man they want. They watch the men, and they fantasize they're the woman in the straight porn.
Yeah.
That threw me off in the beginning, too, until I understood that when some gay men explained why they do that.
Well,
transsexual is concerned, you know, the transsexual, I think, is a way of trying to justify in your own mind that you're not really gay because you're still attracted to someone who has breasts and who looks like a woman but, you know, has a penis attached. And I say it doesn't really matter how you dress it up, what you call it. If you want a penis, you're gay. I don't care if it's a woman wearing a penis. I don't care if it's a woman who they want to wear a strap on, you know, to have sex. I don't care if it's a transsexual. Anytime the penis is involved, to me, this is gay. Because I'm telling you the truth, Deb, straight men don't want a penis.
Well,
Trust me on this.
What about if they're trying to get in contact with a man and a woman in a threesome. Is that still, I mean, is it just a way to say, well, maybe I'm really not gay because I'm still around women? I mean,
no.
Not for me, but is that what
yes,
my husband
is? Yes, in their own minds they can justify, you know, at least a woman is there, even though they have no interest in the woman at all. They're only interested
okay.
in the man.
Do you not... I'm a little confused by the website and everything I've kind of looked at. Is there a difference between a bi and a homosexual? I don't think so. Now that I've read what I've read, I don't think so. I think being bisexual is a way to hide. Am I right on this?
Well, I think, you know, I'll send you my chapter out on bisexuality. And if anybody else is interested in reading it, you can always write to me at bonk@aol.com, and I'll be happy to send you that chapter from my book. And to me, what bisexuality is, it's a passageway. It's the road to gay. It's when a married man wants to justify in his own mind that he's not really gay. And he calls himself bisexual because he's married to you, but he's having sex with a man. So in their minds, they call that bisexual. In my mind, I call that gay. I say that if you're truly bisexual, then it shouldn't matter to you if you're with a woman or a man. If you love your wife enough, that should satisfy you.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't have to go looking for a man.
Mm-hmm.
But these guys who call themselves bisexual are out there having sex with men while they're staying married to their wives. And I think bisexual is a dangerous term because it gives women a sense of false hope.
Mm-hmm.
You know, women are thinking, well, if he's bisexual, if I try hard enough to have him love me enough, he'll become straight. And it doesn't work that way. They want a man. They just say they're bisexual because it's easier to say than gay.
Yeah.
You know, it still sounds trendy. It still sounds more acceptable than saying I'm gay, right?
Well, I definitely don't believe there's a bisexual. I think it is
a
transition period, and that's all it is, or it's an excuse.
Absolutely. It's on the way to gay. But
well,
if you want a penis, I don't care what form you want it in, I don't care what you call yourself, you know, I call it gay. It's just like, did you ever hear of the Kinsey scale? You know, there was
yeah.
Professor Kinsey who had a scale of 1 to 6, and this was such a big thing back in the 70s when they were learning about sexuality. And they rated you, like, on a scale of homosexuality and heterosexuality, 1 to 6. So, like, if you were 1, you were primarily heterosexual. If you were 2, you were primarily heterosexual, but a little bit, you know, interested in men or women. You know, a little homosexual. 3, you're a little more homosexual. 4, you know, and the scale just keeps going up. So, to me, I thought that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard of. To me, it's a choice of 1 or 2. Either you're straight or you're not. You know, once you want somebody of the same sex, you're no longer straight. You're gay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that simple. And I don't know why people have to make it that much more difficult. I mean,
well,
why can't they just say what it is?
I need to ask. I think if my husband, I guess maybe this is my fantasy, that I would, if this information start arriving in our mailbox at our home, that he would open it and read it, that maybe he could understand this and come to terms with it and then come to me. Am I delusional to think that there would be any chance?
I think that your biggest chance is if you have proof or evidence on him and you confront him with it and it's hard for him to wiggle his way out of it. If you think that he's going to have an epiphany one day and say, look, you know what, I think I should do the right thing and tell her the truth, I don't think that's going to be happening.
Mm.
If he hasn't told you by now, he's not going to be telling you.
You really? Okay. Because you know what? I've known, my husband has no idea I know, and I basically have said, whatever has happened in your life, whatever misery you have felt consciously or subconsciously, the truth will set you free. And what are you referring to? And I'm giving him an opportunity. To, did everything but call him out on it because I'm being a decent person and trying to get that out of him. And
well, guess what, Dad? He hasn't been a decent person to you. He's been living a lie with you for 30-some years, right?
Yeah.
How decent do you think he is? He's been abusive to you. He's been blaming you for the problems in the marriage. He's holding you accountable for his unhappiness.
Mm-hmm.
How nice do you think he's going to become to you?
I mean, you know, when I when I did this, I got to say, he told me, there's something wrong with you. You're crazy. You need to go and see somebody. So right away, he turned this around and made it seem like,
right.
What
this is this? This is what we call gaslighting. That's my terminology. Have you ever heard of the movie Gaslighting?
Yeah,
or Gaslight?
I know that movie.
Right, where they try to make you Ingrid Bergman think she was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, gaslighting is when gay husbands try to make you think you're crazy because you're thinking they're gay. So that's what they do. They turn it on you. Now, I do want to mention that there are a lot of wonderful gay husbands who aren't like this. You know, they really have a conscience, and they really feel terrible, and they're really struggling with this. And I work with some wonderful ones. But the reality is there's a lot of the other kind, too. And I make no excuses for them because it's inexcusable what they do to our women. You know, they need to step up to the plate and take some responsibility rather than torturing their wives and taking no responsibility. And here's another thing, Deb, that I want to be real clear about. You know how they say it takes two to make a marriage?
Mm-hmm.
Not in these marriages, it doesn't. It just takes one. Once you have a gay partner, that's the end of the marriage. And you can't judge anything by any kind of norm because you're in an abnormal situation. You know, you're looking for answers of a normal situation when you're in an abnormal situation. And it just doesn't work.
Well, I need to ask this because I don't know who else can answer this for me other than him. And I'm hoping maybe you and Misty can answer this for me. Has he always known that he's gay?
Yeah.
I don't think he's acted on it until recently, and, you know, you can suppress it and deny it, but did he
right.
know?
Yes. He always knew he had attractions. Now, he may not have called it gay, because a lot of times men will justify the fact that those are just normal attractions, that especially, you know, what years did you grow up, like in the 60s and 70s?
Yeah.
Okay, and that's when I was growing up. So back then, you know, there were all these trains of thought about sexuality. People were having orgies and experiments. You know, so if you did have these feelings, you kind of went with the flow of the time. Well, everybody has them. And that's not the case. You know, that was just an age of promiscuity where everybody did what they wanted to do or tried things. And it just wasn't who they were anyway because it was a sign of the time of the drug era. But once they got past that, they realized that's not who they are. So for those people who were growing up, you know, gay, and they could write it off to just, well, it was just fantasy or I was having those feelings, I'm not gay. It's like, you know, if you would talk to my ex-husband, he would be the first to tell you that when he went through all that, he never got emotionally involved with anyone, he never kissed anybody on the lips, you know, it wasn't like a passionate kind of thing, it was just a sexual act. So in their minds, they didn't think of this as being gay. They just thought it was a sexual act. They justified it however they had to. But did they know that they had these attractions? Absolutely. And even though you think that he's never acted on it till now, that's probably doubtful.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And, you know, I think that if you would get a copy of the book that just came out that Doug and I wrote, and Doug is going to be our guest next week, by the way, and that will be a really great show. The book is called Over the Cliff, Gay Husbands and Straight Marriages. And this is interviews with 16 different gay men. And really, the book was done as a support book for gay men who wanted to know how to come out, what's the best way to do it. You know, and I put in how I felt was the best way, what their responsibilities are, why they need to do it. And Doug interviewed these 16 different men, including himself. He's the 17th man. And what was so amazing to me is that these guys were really honest. And they talked about how they lied. They talked about how they cheated. They talked about how they would never tell their wives, you know, the real, you know, things that were going on. So this book ended up being, for me, such a great guide for women who don't understand the gay male thinking on how to understand exactly what they're thinking because they were so honest about it. And, you know, a lot of their stories are very sad stories on how they fought their homosexuality because of religion, because of family. And they love their wives. And, you know, like I say, not all of them are like your ex-husband. Some of these guys are really good guys. But some of them weren't because they were very frustrated and they were angry. They were in a marriage that they didn't want to be in. You know, so they took it out on their wives. You have to remember, a lot of times with these guys, they look at their wives and it's a reflection of their own guilt. And so, you know, you're the person who's reflecting their guilt for them. So that's why they become, many of them, abusive. But some, there were all kinds of guys in this book, but you really do learn from this. To me, it was the greatest eye-opener of how these guys operate. So you might want to think about picking that book up over the cliff.
Well, I definitely am going to be doing more reading. But I don't understand anybody that wants to take somebody else into their... I have a hard time understanding that as a concept at all. That somebody would want to take somebody else with them regardless of what their... what their evil thing is or their problem. And especially in the name of marriage. It just, this is what just blows me away. This is the person that I was supposed to trust. This is the person that I wanted to comfort me. I don't think he was capable of that. I don't think,
no, he wasn't.
And you know, I held on for that. I held on, I fought hard. It was a battle that I always knew existed, and I fought hard and tried to stay in this marriage. And it wasn't until the day I realized if I want things to be different, I have to make a change because I could not change him. I was not going to change him. Of course, I didn't know that this was the problem, but overall, I knew that I couldn't change this man. And if I wanted any happiness, that I had to make the change. And now I've discovered what I believe really is the problem of what has happened to us.
It really is a problem. But let me ask you this, Deb. If you would have found this out 20 years ago, would you have left?
I see myself as a very weak person 20 years ago. And I met my husband when I was still in high school. And I don't think I was on sure, solid ground then. And I developed with him. And I let him manipulate me. And I see it. I mean, it's just, you just can't imagine the gears that have clicked recently with all of this. It all makes sense. Everything makes sense now. And so, no,
and
I don't
that,
think
you know,
I would
I always
have 20 years ago.
And one of the things I always say is that there's no accidents here. These guys know who to pick to marry. You know, it's not an accident that he picked you. I'm not saying he consciously went out and got you, but subconsciously, you were a really good candidate for being the wife to a gay man because you weren't sure of yourself, because you weren't going to question, because he could manipulate you, and because, you know, he could, you know, like I say, control what you're doing. And these guys look for women like that. This is why we tell women, after a marriage like this, you have to recognize within yourself what you need to build up, so that you don't make this mistake again, because there are a lot of guys out there who are predators. They're not gay, but they're men who are looking for women who can be manipulated, who can be controlled. And if you've been through a long-term marriage like that, the most important thing you have to do is rebuild your life.
Mm-hmm.
And so this doesn't happen again. I mean, you can have a good new relationship with someone, and hopefully one day that will happen for you. But it won't happen unless you make the internal changes so you can find a different kind of man.
I think I see myself as a completely different person than, and it was a progression. This wasn't because of what I've discovered. This is the progression of me. And, you know, it took 30-some years for me to get to where I am at as well. You know, I mean, I buried myself in my children and knew that they became more important than anything to me. And because my marriage was never going to be. And so, but I continued, I stayed in, thinking that this is okay, it's not great, you know. So I blame myself, and I'm glad I had enough sense to finally see it for what it really is.
Well, I think that's a tremendous tribute to you, Deb, and I'm going to tell you why. A lot of women, the longer the time that goes on, the more they fall into this quicksand that they can never get out of. You know, you went in the opposite direction. You became stronger. You got to the point where you were able to say, I don't want to live like this anymore. But so many women, the longer they stay in and the more their self-esteem is knocked off and, you know, peeled away and their sexual esteem is gone and they feel no sense of, you know, they can think for themselves. And I became like that after a short amount of time. I can never imagine how I would have been after 20, 30, 40 years in a marriage. I would have been, you know, a zombie. So a lot of women just get so peeled down and so stripped down that they don't have any, they're not able to think at all. So the fact that you were able to stand up and realize this is not what I want, I'm not going to live like this anymore, this was really a tremendous tribute to you and to your inner strength. I hope you recognize that.
Oh, well, yeah, I do. Bonnie, and I have to tell you, that was my exact words to my husband. I knew that there was a point, I reached a point where I told my husband, I looked at him and I said, I don't know how I'm going to live, but I'm not living like this anymore. Now, I had no idea at this time that he was homosexual. But I knew that there was something definitely so deep and so wrong that this could not continue. And I wanted to go for counseling, and we did, and he couldn't. I don't think, you know, I can't speak for him, but I know that he wasn't honest. And what he believes and what he says are completely different. But I knew that I couldn't go on anymore. I made that choice, and I made it known to him, and I did move on those exact words, and nothing changed, so I made my change. So,
well, you made every effort to try to make things work, and it just couldn't work. But don't you feel so much better knowing now why?
I would rather struggle with this now and think that I have some hope for whatever life I have ahead of me. At least I have some kind of life left. If I had gone to my death and I just think to myself, I'm so fortunate to at least know this, because now I have choices. I didn't feel like I had a choice in that trap marriage. So, yes, I feel freedom. I feel freedom, you know, and I wish my husband could feel the same thing. The truth will set you free. You know, if he could be truthful, it would set him free. He wouldn't wear this burden anymore.
Exactly, and this is what I tell all the men who come to me. The truth does set you free, and it's never going to be pleasant. Your wife's never going to be happy to hear, honey, I'm gay, but she'll deal with it, you know, and it may not be overnight. It may take more than a week. You know, look, you've dealt a whole lifetime with it. It just doesn't happen overnight, but you have no chance of ever finding happiness if you can't be honest, if you have to keep living a lie. You know, I always say, I can't imagine how these guys go day in and day out and live this particular lie. Having to always look over your shoulder, always look over, you know, who's watching you, who, you know, where you're going to be discovered, who's going to find out. To me, it must be the hardest thing to have to pretend. And I have a very good friend I've developed, a young gentleman who's going to be coming out to his wife soon. And, you know, I feel, my heart goes out to him. You know, he's a very conscionable, wonderful man, and he just doesn't want to hurt his family. And he realized by living this, he's not going to be helping them at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it's already been so much damage done because he can't be to his wife the kind of husband that she needs.
Mm-hmm.
But at least, once again, I said to him, as hard as it is, and she will be very upset and angry, you can't expect women to just say, honey, it's fine. It's not going to be fine. But guess what? It's better to tell them and let them grieve and get past it than to keep wondering what's wrong in the marriage.
Yeah.
Because
now I feel like I have
answers.
And I feel like I have answers now. And, you know, when I go to my husband, and I don't know how and I don't know when how I'm going to do this, but if he does not be honest with me, I will not have any type of a relationship with him. If he... Because I know he is broken down, doesn't understand, wants me to stay. Can't we just be friends? I cannot be his friend if he cannot. You know, I would rather try and salvage any type of relationship we possibly could outside of a marriage. But the only way that that's going to happen is if he is able to be honest about what has happened. And if he can't, then no, I will not. I don't want to have anything to do with him. Because this is important. This is really important because there is no relationship if he can't be honest.
And now if he can be honest, what kind of relationship do you foresee that you could have with him?
Possibly, you know, things to do with the children.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now I've told him, you do not want to speak to me now because I am operating from angry, which is not a good place to operate from. You don't want to speak to me when I'm angry. You don't want to deal with me when I'm angry because I know I'm going to say and do the wrong things. I've got to get my head together and then I can be able to reason with him about this. I just don't think it's a good time to approach him when I'm angry. And I know that eventually I have to stop being angry in order for me to move on. But right now, it's not a. I know that it's not a good time to really call
well,
out
you know,
on
that
this.
Misty and I will both confirm this for you, that you know, you've just recently found out you are going to go through a grieving period, just like the loss or the death of somebody who you loved. Because you really grieve when you find, you know, at the end of a marriage, and especially when you find out what the marriage was really not about or about. And you're going to be angry, you're going to go back and forth, you're going to go through all the different phases. But I would say, you know, I call it gay husband recovery. I mean, you're looking at least a good year. And you'll go through, you know, you'll go through more good days than bad days as time is passing. But don't be afraid about being angry, because anger means that you're fighting back. And don't try to suppress it. You know, it's not going to turn into bitterness. I mean, your head's really together. But you have a lot of right to be angry. And you know what?
Good,
if he really truly wants a relationship with you, what he needs to do is to apologize. You know, until he can understand what he's done to you and really mean it. You know, I was unable to forgive my ex-husband. You know, he always said, well, okay, I'm sorry. That's not good enough. You have to understand the damage that was done, how it affected me as a person, how it affected my whole psyche. And it took 10 years till he was able to say he's sorry and really mean it so I could forgive him.
Mm-hmm.
But forgiveness has to be earned. And, you know, that's the way it should be. Hopefully he'll do the right thing by you. He hasn't done it yet. But, I don't know, maybe if you get him that book, he might, you know, read it and feel differently, because these are all the men who said what they should have done.
I would love for him to be able to get something from this. I mean, I have. I've gotten something from reading the website and just reading the newsletters. You know, I've talked with my sister's been a great source, and she, you know, it's hard to find people that understand, that haven't experienced this, but my sister's been a great source for me, and she understands. And people, you know, the few people that I have told, they have looked at me like, you got to be kidding. Like, I've got a horn coming out of my head, and that I'm lying. And, you know,
this is the whole problem. You know, it's not just like in another marriage where marriage doesn't work out. You know, life goes on. There are so many complex situations with this kind of marriage. Once people find out and they don't understand. In fact, one of my books that I wrote, you know, with a group of our women was called How I Made My Husband Gay. And it came about because one day we were going to a get-together in New York, and we stopped at a rest station. There were about 12 of us in the van. And a man came over, you know, he saw a bunch of women. We were going to the rest stop there. And, you know, we were a little, you know, dressed up for the day. And he said, oh, where are all you ladies going? And we said, well, we're going out. And he kept pressing, you know, how do you know each other? Da-da-da. So somebody said, well, we all know each other because our husbands are gay. And he looked at us and he started laughing. He said, oh, well, were they gay when you married them? You know, like they think that, that's why we wrote this book called How We Made Our Husbands Gay, Myths About Straight Wives. But you'd be shocked how many people ask that question. Well, was he gay when you married him?
I think my husband is going to accuse me of it. I think my husband is going to tell me that I made him gay. That's what I expect.
Some husbands are very cruel, and they do that, Deb. I mean, those husbands who take no responsibility for anything, and those are sociopathic men. And the reason why they're sociopathic is because some of these guys just live a lie every day of their life, and lying becomes second nature to them. I don't know if you've caught him in many lies over the years.
Oh, he will lie. Because I was always such a good-natured person, I would never want to embarrass him or call him out on things. He would stand in front of me and tell a lie to somebody knowing that I knew it wasn't true. And so his lies over time, too, I did see his lies becoming extravagant. And I began to wonder, does he believe his own lies or...
You know what, it's just
lying.
Become so second nature to some of these guys who are sociopathic in their behavior. Misty, can you address that?
Wow, yeah. You know, I think sometimes when you say something long enough, you tell something long enough, you almost become what you say. And in these situations, I honestly believe that so many of them, not all of them, there are some good ones out there that do the right thing, but most of them they cover the truth so much that I truly believe they begin to believe themselves when they talk. I certainly
tell
think
a
my
lie often enough
did.
And tell a lie often enough and you begin
Absolutely.
To believe it yourself.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That's my experience. That's my experience with some of the women I work with and my personal experience. I mean, my ex, I literally couldn't say, you know, what color is the sky today? He might say green. You know, I mean, it would be some of the simplest things. And the telltale sign was when I knew that it was something that probably wasn't true, he would just get really irate. His anger, whew, would it really come out, you know? And that's the problem when you don't tell the truth. One is you tell it enough, you start to believe it yourself. Another is you tell it enough, then you get confused. You don't
mm-hmm.
remember what you told last. So,
it's
you know, there's all
track
these
of the lies.
Remembers.
Keeping track of the lies is a full-time job.
Uh-huh.
But
yeah,
Deb, to get back to your question, I don't know if Misty will agree with me or not. I think some of these guys really start believing their lies. Do you
yeah,
think so, Misty?
Yeah, that's what I said. I mean, you tell something long enough, you believe it yourself. You know, and I
truly
believe for these men, that's what they do. You know, it's, you know, if you just keep saying it over and over, it's like, you know, it's like the premise behind positive affirmations. You know, you tell yourself something positive, self-talk long enough, hopefully is you'll believe it. Well, the same
mm-hmm.
thing can happen with other things. If you tell yourself a story long enough, that's going to be your story. That's what you're going to believe.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it does become part of who they are, unfortunately.
Misty,
was your husband narcissistic, Deb?
Oh, my husband was lie after lie, and there's nobody to dispute him, only me. And, of course, he had total control over me, so he knew that I would allow him to continue lying like that. When we were in counseling, the counselor, when I told her that my husband lies, she said, I can't see you guys anymore as a couple. I can see you each individually, but I can't address a couple if they can't be honest. And so, you know, I mean, his lies really just buried him as well.
But was he a narcissistic guy, Deb?
Yeah.
A lot of these guys are narcissistic also. Like,
yeah.
It's all about them.
Yeah, I definitely. My husband was an only child. And
mm-hmm.
I think that my husband had a turning point. When both of his parents died, he
mm-hmm.
became his ethics. He lost his ethics and his morals. I mean, I don't know what he had before, but they sure intensified after both of his parents died. And
well, that's usually when it happens, because then, you know, first of all, many of these guys put up the cover until their parents die.
Really?
Because they never want their parents to know. But once
really?
Their parents
common.
Die, right?
Mm-hmm. That happened in my personal experience. My ex-husband, once his mother died, that's when things really started getting rough with him. You know, he just... I couldn't help but notice I really had to come out of my own denial because he was doing so many things. He really amplified once his mother died.
So this is pretty typical. Misty,
I've had a lot of gay men who have come to me and said, well, I had to live my whole life for my parents, you know, so I wouldn't be disappointing them. But, you know, and I was never happy, but I did what they wanted me to do. But now that my father died or my mother died, whatever it is, you know, I can't keep living for them because, you know, I did that my whole life and I'm miserable. So, yeah, that happens a lot, Deb.
But what about, to me, this is what I say, what about me? I am your consequence. Whatever has transpired in our marriage, because at that time I didn't know what transpired. Whatever has transpired, I am your consequence. You are looking at your consequence. You know, so I tried to get to my husband in a lot of different ways. But obviously it wouldn't have made any difference because what really is the problem. It just, I don't think this, what I've, the homosexual life is something that would have made a difference. It's not something to me you turn on and off. You don't decide you are one day. And I don't even know if he understands that. At least I look at this. He might think that, give me a year. He tells me, give me a year, Deb, And things, I'll tell you, I will change. Well, I don't know what he's thinking. This isn't something you turn on and off and decide,
maybe he thinks he'll get it out of his system. He'll go out there and get it out of his system so he doesn't have to do it anymore.
Yeah.
You know, when people are living in a state of denial, denial is a very, very powerful thing. And I see it happening all the time. You know, look, a lot of people live in denial. But in their own minds, they'll justify any kind of action. They'll make arrangements, they'll make deals, they'll do anything they can to avoid the inevitable. And they just don't want the truth to come out. So they'll try a strategy like that. Give me a year. And you know what can also happen? He can come begging, you know, for forgiveness and say, look, I realize that, you know, you were a good wife. I'm going to really try harder. Let's give this another try. Because he's going to panic. That could happen.
Well, he's right about one thing, though, Bonnie. He is right about one thing. I was a good wife. But the one thing he's wrong about is there's no going back. There is no going back. I don't understand how these women have an idea or an inkling and can even pass this off. I just don't understand.
But they're hoping against hope, just like their husbands are hoping against hope. When somebody tells you, you know, somebody, you have to also remember, Deb, here's another thing. Some women actually had wonderful marriages. You know, the three of us on the phone didn't, but we meet lots of women who really had wonderful marriages.
Really?
They were married to their best friends. And this is what the real shocker is. These are the women who have the really hard time giving up the marriages because they did have what they thought was a perfect life.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, maybe the sex wasn't perfect, but everything else was.
Mm-hmm.
So they could, you know, they just started to think, well, you know, they've been married 20, 30 years, you know, sex does go down. But they still had their very best friend with them. They did everything together. So for those women, and I would say about half of our women had good marriages.
Wow.
You know, it's really hard to give up something that was so good when somebody's coming back and saying to you, you know, look, whatever I have to do to keep us together, you don't want to give up something that good.
Yeah.
So I can see why some women. Now, in our cases, to me, it was like a tremendous relief. I know to Misty it was a tremendous relief, you know, because I felt that I had lost myself in that marriage because, you know, I wasn't strong enough to stand up to it.
Yeah.
And I let it take me over because, you know, I wasn't that strong at that moment. And my ex-husband was much stronger mentally. You know, he had much more, you know, strength, and he wasn't happy. I mean, he'll be the first to tell me he was a jerk back then, you know, but we were young, and he didn't understand himself.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I cut my losses early, and that's where I think I have the advantage of most women. You know, I didn't linger forever in a marriage after, you know, 6 years. I was out.
Well, obviously you had some strength that you didn't realize you had because I'm mad at myself for hanging in there for so long, only to come to find out that it wouldn't have changed a thing. Just all those years, I couldn't make a difference, and I didn't see that.
Well, how old were you when you got married?
20.
Right. And at 20 years old, what do you think you know?
You know, I thought of myself as a pretty mature person, maybe not a secure person, but I always thought of myself as an understanding person.
And you were. And that's why he married you. But you weren't equipped to handle this.
Yeah.
You didn't have any idea what you were dealing with.
Yeah.
You know, at 20 years old, first of all, even today, with all our sophistication and technology, at 20 years old, how many people are really prepared for marriage?
Yeah.
And going back then, when we didn't have any sort of information or any kind of savvy when it came to this kind of stuff, there was no support or help. There were no shows like Oprah doing all these things on television. Nobody talked about this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how did we even know about this? I mean, I didn't know any married gay people. I mean, I knew gay people, but I thought that gay means that you want to go with somebody who's the same sex as you are.
Mm-hmm.
It would never dawn on me that somebody gay would marry me.
Yeah. And, you know, to me, I have a brother who is gay, and he came out in his 20s. And my husband knew. And my husband even made reference to my son when he was small because my son wanted to dress up like Batman and like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. He said, you're raising a gay, he's going to be gay. I never understood why my husband said that about his child. Of course, my son is not.
He was scared. You know, these guys a lot of times are very homophobic. You know, they think they're going to throw you off with their homophobia if they mention anti-gay things,
mm-hmm.
or to make you feel like you're responsible if you have a gay child. You know, it's going to be your fault because they're fearing within themselves that, you know, they have a gay child.
Uh-huh.
You know, they'll do anything except accept the responsibility. And the fact that you had a gay brother, your husband probably knew that before he married you.
Oh, my God. My husband's the one who told me, he said, your brother's gay. I said, now we didn't know for about another 8 years. My brother didn't come out. We always thought that he was just awkward around girls. Well, he came out to us. My brother
mm-hmm.
did. But my husband knew. Somehow he knew.
It's not somehow. Gay people know each other. So, I mean, that was no coincidence, but the fact that you had a gay brother and you were accepting and you loved your brother, I'm sure,
mm-hmm.
you know, was just one more, you know, reassurance to your husband that you're an accepting, kind person, and that's what they're
mm-hmm.
looking for.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've got to ask one thing of Misty. I'm worried about confronting my husband on this. I'm concerned with him turning violent. I'm surprised he hasn't tracked me down and sought me out to even without knowing this. But I do worry when I call him out on this that now I do have a safety because he's going to say I'm lying. Why would I don't tell people this? Whatever proof I think I have. I'm worried that my husband is going to turn ugly on me. He's never been violent, but there's been situations where I think he's been over-dominating, controlling, holding, pushing, confining. So I'm concerned he has guns. I just don't know what I'm up against next because I just can't go on with my life without confronting him on this. Whether he denies it or admits it, I still have to call him out on it.
Wow. That's hard. That's a hard decision to make. And I understand where you're coming from because it's something, you know, you're seeking some justice for all these years. I can completely
mm-hmm.
understand that. In doing so, you have to be very, very careful. In my experience, I had a very abusive marriage. I actually didn't realize how abusive it was until I had stepped out of it probably for over a year. And I looked back and I thought, oh, my goodness. It was so bad when I went to go see and pick up my divorce attorney. Of course, I knew not to mention it to my now ex-husband. I was telling my story to the attorney, and he said, well, you know, I'll take your case, but you have to have an emergency protection order and a domestic violence order. And I said, well, I'm afraid to get that because I don't know what he'll do. And the attorney said, exactly, this is an abusive situation you're going through. And I was just so shocked that the attorney had required that, or he said he would not take my case. And I was telling my own story and not realizing how severe it was, if that makes sense, because that's part of living inside that little circle of crazy. You don't realize how bad it is until you take a step out. So anyway, you know, my suggestion is, number one, you have to proceed with caution. Number two, you have to, you know, see what's legal in your area, and I would certainly consult an attorney and or consult a therapist if you're seeing a therapist, because each area is different with their laws and regulations about what forms of papers you need, like for any type of emergency protection order. And if there's been violence in the past, pushing, shoving, anything like that, you've really got to be careful. You really do. If you don't want to do that route, I would look in my local phone book and possibly call the sheriff's department, tell them you'd like to speak to someone about domestic violence, you know, you're looking into getting a divorce, and but you want to, you know, discuss things with your husband, you know, what routes would they suggest? Almost every community has like a domestic violence shelter, and you may think, well, it's not that bad, and it may not be, but these places usually have wonderful tips, wonderful information. They may even have a mediator. Some places have mediators to where that it wouldn't be a legal mediator, but it would be a place where you could come to that would be common ground, that wouldn't be your place or his place, and you could come together and discuss something. You know,
mm-hmm.
number one, if you're afraid of someone, don't ever get yourself in an isolated situation if you don't know how they're going to react. Never put yourself in that situation. So, you know, there's a few resources I would suggest. One is possibly seeking the advice of an attorney and see where they direct you. Two is call your local sheriff's department, ask them, you know, for the someone in domestic violence. They should have someone employed in domestic violence. Three is, you know, find a local domestic violence shelter. And like I said, it may not be that severe, but, you know, any time that you feel like you've been in danger, that's severe, you know, and you have to make sure that you're safe. Safety is number one. Safety is always number one. And sometimes these men do not take this information easily. I know
this,
my
ex is what I'm worried
I had,
about.
Yes,
I'm
I
out and
my,
I can't. I'm not exposed to it every day anymore. Mm-hmm. But when I, and maybe I should just let this go and not call him out on it. But I also feel like I have to. But I'm also putting myself in jeopardy at the same time. And I have talked, I actually started speaking with the domestic violence group in my area. That's where I started. How do I need to, what do I need to do? So, you know, I didn't know all the facets of what had happened in my marriage, but I did start there. You know, they were a good place to start. But, you know, I just don't know. I want to be able to approach him and the fear of doing that and, you know, just knowing that he's more likely to be violent, I think, when I call him out on this. He's tried
that's
so
why
hard
I got
to...
the papers. Mm-hmm. It's hard. It's a hard decision. You know, I didn't meet up with my now ex and confront him with it. What I chose to do was, of course, my situation is not for everyone. I can't tell someone what to do in terms of a legal matter. But what I did for myself was I decided, you know, I knew what was going on, and I decided at that point in time I had to do whatever it took to protect myself. And that meant that I called him out of the home, and I had him, his divorce papers served, and I had the emergency protection order and domestic violence at the same time. Now, each state and each municipality can be different with what they require. But the state I was in at the time and the county I was in, I was able to serve the divorce papers with the other orders, which meant he could not get within so many feet of me. Because once he was out of the home, he could not come back in unless the sheriff escorted him. But it was tricky doing that. It was very tricky. And, if you know, the good advantage is you are out of the home. But, you know, whenever you get these protection orders, it's like I tell people, women that I've worked with before, and not just women married to gay men, but, you know, domestic violence can happen, any marriage, straight marriages, straight gay marriage, whatever kind of marriage or relationship. The women I've worked with, you know, you've got to remember it's still only a piece of paper. You have to take your security and your safety very serious.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's something that you really, I would suggest to follow up with, you know, domestic violence organization again, see what resources they have. They usually have some really, really good resources and information that, you know, pertains to your location. And they're usually very well versed in what you can do legally. Sometimes they have legal aid. You know, it just depends on where you're at and how much resources that agency has. But, you know, research it. And I would suggest, you know, talk it through with someone. Make sure you have support. For myself, when I knew my ex-husband was going to be served, I had someone around the clock to be staying with me for, like, the first week just because I had an extra sense of security. And I had a security alarm. I changed all the keys, all the locks. And I reset the security system and all that. You know, I took every precaution that I could.
Yeah.
I kept the cell phone on me at all times. So,
well,
you know, there's
lots
of information you can get from agencies that can be very helpful.
Well, I'll be talking with some of this with my therapist as well. I just want to make sure that I do this the right and safe way. And
yeah, you have to be safe. You really do. Because you never know how they are going to react.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you guys letting me ask you questions and talking with me. So,
Deb,
I
am just feeling a little better knowing that you're not alone out there.
Oh, no. I've got a good therapist, and my sister has been phenomenal. For somebody who's, you know, for somebody who's not in the middle of this, she sure seems to be able to understand. She's been able to find things for me, and just understand it, which I think is difficult, you know, for somebody who's not experiencing it. So I do feel like I've got good support, and your website has been helpful to me, and there's definitely more that I want to read. So
join our support sessions, because you'll meet other women who traveled this road. You'll see how, you know, they've done it. You know, they give great suggestions and great support. You know, and this way you feel like you're not alone, and you realize that so many other women are going through the same issue. And the great thing about our support chat is you don't have to say anything. Everybody knows exactly what you're feeling because they've all lived it.
Yeah.
Or they're living it. And it just goes to show you that it doesn't matter. You know, you can come from all different kinds of backgrounds, cultures, religions, be in different parts of the country and the world, and yet we all share this common bond.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, it's going to be a road ahead, and don't feel like you ever have to do it alone. You've met us. There's always support available. We're here for you. Don't hesitate, you know, to write, to come, to chat, whatever help you need, we're here for you.
Oh, I'm so glad that I have been able to do some of this reading and get in the chats and ask some questions to you guys. I mean, you guys have probably heard more than anybody. So I'm kind of curious, how many women a week contact you and fall under this?
I have between, I would say, about anywhere from 30 to 60 women every week.
Oh, my God.
You know, and it's always amazing to me that every story is different and every story is the same. You know, it's different in the sense of where they come from, and I have people from around the world in other countries, in Australia, England, Spain, South America, you know, you name the country, Africa. And, you know, the sad part is there are some cultures where women are so stuck because they're not, you know, homosexuality is against the law.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to be stuck forever in a bad marriage.
Double denial.
Well, sometimes their husbands are honest, but, you know, there's nothing they can do about it because they can't live a gay life in these countries.
Is this more prevalent with men, this happening in a marriage with men, or is it just as equally for women?
I don't think it's as equally for women, and it doesn't mean there's not as many gay women as there are gay men. You know, I would say there's probably the same amount. But I think that women don't have the same kind of social stigma of not getting married that men have. You know, men are, you know, socialized from the time that they're young that this is the way of the world. You know, you get married, you have a family. And also, I think for women, it's easier for them to be more honest about it. That's not to say this doesn't happen, because it does.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and I certainly see it happening. I have, you know, men who write to me about their wives. But I don't feel that it's as much.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's certainly just as many gay people, but I think that women are truer to themselves. I think it's harder for a woman to put herself in a marriage, you know, where she has to keep avoiding sex.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it's just much more of a strain on her, you know, especially as she, you know, has come to terms with herself.
Yeah.
But I think that women are probably maybe a little more honest with themselves about it. They don't have to live in that kind of denial because of society.
Well, you know, that brings up a point for me, because when I was reading your website and that, I did come across something that said a lot of husbands reject their wives because they're nymphomaniacs. And in my case, it was just the opposite. My husband always said I never did anything exciting enough. I was never fun. And he always made me feel insuperior when it came to, you know, and so he did just the opposite. Is that pretty common as well?
Mm-hmm. What happens is that the men turn the tables and make you feel that you're the one who's inadequate in bed. And especially this happens a lot with my Christian women who don't have real sexual experience before they get married, or women who didn't have much sexual experience. So it's easy to push those buttons of inexperience and make you feel like you're inadequate, when in fact the truth is that you're a woman and they want a man.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just so much easier to make it feel like it's your fault. And then what happens is you feel that sense of sexual rejection. No woman wants to have to feel that she's not able to satisfy her husband in the bedroom. So you just become more repressed, or, you know, you feel more fearful of the sexual relationship.
Oh, and for me, it was total repulsion. It got to the point where it's like, I just didn't want to have anything to do with them because I knew I was going to come away from it not feeling good about anything.
Exactly. That's the whole thing. And chances are he was not very good in bed. And it was probably him blaming you rather than accepting the responsibility for himself.
Well, this is where I did fool myself because I really did believe that I was undesirable. He really did do a good job of making, and it wasn't until I've done some reading from your website that I've been able to figure that one out. That I always did. I blame myself for that because I just didn't know. And so now
so
that
you
I
can't blame yourself for something you didn't know, Deb, it's not your fault.
No.
You know, these guys are much smarter than we are, and they know how, like you say, they're manipulative, and a lot of them are controlling. And they know how to push our buttons of insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how they're able to manipulate us, because they know how to say things that are going to hurt us, and that we want to avoid confrontation. You know, they yell to get their way. You know, I know all the little signs and all the little symptoms. Lived had been there, done it. And the thing is that, you know, they just know how to push you. So stop, you know, just feeling that any of this was your fault. This was not your fault, any of it.
Well,
if you would have had a loving,
nurturing,
caring husband who would have treated you as a prized possession of his, as a prized partner, not a possession, but a prized partner, someone who would have, you know, made you feel you're beautiful, and someone who would have wanted to make you feel that you were desirable, you know, you would have been totally different.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you lost this because you never had it.
Mm-hmm.
He took that from you.
Well, you know, and I sometimes think my husband can never feel the loss because he never knew what he had. If he knew...
Well, no, he really never did that because it didn't matter to him. The only loss he feels is the loss of what he feels he missed because of you. And that's why he resented you. You know, a lot of that anger is resentment towards you because, you know, these guys feel they're jailkeepers. Even though it's not a matter that we didn't force them into any kind of marriage, you know, they wanted to marry us.
Mm-hmm.
And we went into these marriages in good faith to be good wives, you know, and looking to plan our lives together and have a future forever and ever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we weren't looking at ourselves as being their, you know, jailer or somebody keeping them imprisoned.
Right,
but that's
not what a marriage is about. It's not about running a tyranny, which is the way I always felt that our marriage was. It was, he was, you know, running it like he was the tyrant, and everybody had to
be angry all the time, Deb, because he didn't want to be there. You know, he put himself there, but he felt like he was living in his own hell, and he took it out on you. And to me, it's inexcusable. Because this man has taken away from you what was rightfully yours.
Mm-hmm. I just wish I knew this sooner. I wish I had this figured out sooner. I just wish I knew. I didn't know what was wrong in our marriage, but I knew that there was something eventually. And that's the day I knew that there was nothing I could do to make it different, to change him, that's the day I knew.
I would both tell you how impressed we are that you had the strength after you found that out and knew it to walk away.
Well, thank you. Because that's more strength
than most women ever have.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know,
I think
I'm so impressed with you, Deb.
No, thank you. I appreciate it. I really do. I'm glad to be where I'm at now. You know, I mean, I feel so much better knowing what has transpired than trying to figure it out. I'd rather much be on this side of it.
Exactly. And I'm so glad you said that so other women can realize it also. It's better to know than to have to keep guessing. Right?
Be in denial. Well, thank God I'm not in denial either. You know, that's a limbo in itself, just to keep living that, to stay in
denial. Well, hopefully you've inspired
many
women tonight, Deb, with your, you know, attitude. I mean, I feel really inspired, don't you, Misty?
Absolutely. I mean, it sounds like you've really, you know, like I think she said earlier, it sounds like you've really got your head on your shoulders and, you know, you're thinking things through and, you know, it's, this is not easy, you know. A lot of times women go into a really deep depression and they're almost paralyzed. some women, mm-hmm. I would say, are paralyzed, you know, and it takes some time to crawl out of that hole sometimes and set the priorities and get yourself going. And you said something a little earlier I think is very interesting. You said you're going through some anger. Well, I think anger is a good phase to go through, just because when you have anger, as long as you, you know, control it in the correct way, and it sort of gives you some energy and some motivation to move forward. So mm-hmm. in this type of situation, anger can be a good thing to go through. It helps
well,
you move forward.
I have told my family, I'm angry right now and I have to be. And, you know, so they think, well, you know, just stop being mad and, you know, no, I have to be angry. I have to have that right now. I don't know how many facets there are to this whole thing. I don't know how many facets there are, but I know that the anger is one of them. I also know that if I don't let go of the anger, that I eventually won't be able to go forward
right.
either.
You're
but
early,
I
you're
have
early.
To have this right now.
It's purpose right now. It's anger serves its purpose right now. You know, when you find yourself getting stuck, angry and bitter, that's a different story. But in the beginning, anger definitely serves its purpose. And it's a thing, mm-hmm. you know, take hold, let it move you forward, let it give you the energy that you need to move forward to get the things done that you do need to get done.
Mm-hmm. And Deb, don't forget, you know, you have a right to be angry. You have a lot to be angry about.
Mm-hmm.
You have a
but
lifetime
what, you know,
of being mistreated and not being told why.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think that's
well,
worth being angry over?
Yeah, and you know, but this
I
is
would
the
be.
Point about myself is I don't like myself operating from angry. I don't want to speak from angry, but I have to. There's no getting around this. I figured
well,
that one
part
out.
That's part of how you get past the grieving process is let the anger out. And like I say, Deb, you have a lot to be angry about. When somebody misleads you for 33 years and they can't be honest with you and they blame you for the problems and they make you feel inadequate and they make you feel there's something wrong with you and they still won't come clean, you have a lot to be angry about.
Mm-hmm.
I'm angry and I'm not even living your life. I'm angry hearing
yeah.
your story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yeah. don't feel bad about being angry. It will take time and hopefully it will pass. But,
yeah.
you know, and hopefully you'll come to acceptance.
Yeah.
And then just move on. But let yourself go through the same grieving period. Otherwise, if you don't properly grieve, then it never leaves you.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
every part of every, you know, recovery is going through the steps you need to go through. So don't feel bad about that at all. It's still early in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Let yourself
yeah.
be angry. Let yourself grieve. And, you know, I don't think everything's even all settled in with you yet.
No. Oh, I'm still discovering. Things are still, every day. Every day,
mm-hmm.
if I read more, I find out more, it makes more sense every day.
Exactly. This is a learning period. And you'll still go through all the same phases of shock, of, you know, learning all these new things, and things will pop into your head, and all those red flags you missed. You know, things will just start coming to you after a while, and then you'll really be, you know, upset, and that's just normal. But
mm-hmm.
but you get past it.
Well, I definitely...
And you can get past them. We're here to help you get past it. That's what we're here yeah. for. We're like a family.
Well, I think shocking and disturbing is the first place I felt, and now the anger. So, you know, I've moved on to anger. I'm past shocked and disturbed because...
Well, that's good. You're moving along.
yeah. Well,
and someday you'll get to the end. But, you know,
yeah.
let yourself grieve. Do it the right
well,
way so that you can have a happy future in the future.
Yeah, that's my plan. Well, I definitely plan on reading more and listening more, and I'm glad that I've had an opportunity to find your group as well. So,
yeah, we're
I
glad you found us too, Deb. It's not
Thank
the kind
you.
Of place that people want to come to, but as long as you're going through this, it's a great group of women.
Mm-hmm.
So
yep.
Misty and I are going to say goodnight because it's the end of our show time, and we want to thank you so much for being our
thank
guest
you.
Tonight, Deb.
All right. Thank you.
We look forward to having you as part of our network and
yep.
seeing your life move on.
Yep. You'll hear from me again.
Goes.
Thanks. Okay.
All right.
Thank
you take
Deb.
Care.
Keep yourself safe.
Okay. Bye.
All right. Take care, Deb. Well, Misty, Deb was a great guest, wasn't she?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's so
I'm
many
so
stories
impressed
out
with
there.
Her insight. Wow. She
yeah.
truly was an inspiration to me.
Absolutely. And hopefully... so many women out there heard her because I know she has to be an inspiration to so many women out there. You know, you just gotta, she exemplifies how you can just you can do this, you know. It's not easy, but you can, and it's better to, in my opinion, it's better to know than not to know. And it's just
absolutely
it's,
when you can deal with the truth,
blame
you know
yourself.
So, Misty, we had another great show. I just want to remind people that the summer is passing by quickly. And if anybody is going to be listening in the next few days, I'm going to be in New York on July 28th and meeting up with a few of our women just for an informal luncheon. So if any of you are in the New York area and you would like to join me, please write to me at bonkaye@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. Also, in my upcoming newsletter, you'll read about Misty's workshop that's coming up. And what's the date of that again, Misty?
That is, the moment is August the 20th, 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Okay, and that's a really excellent opportunity to get in on a free workshop with Misty. You're not under any obligation at all. It's your opportunity to see how, you know, important those workshops are, to see if it helps you in moving forward. Remember, you can go to lots of different therapists, but nobody understands this better than we do. So why not go to the best? And Misty really is the best. It's also a reminder that next week, I'm very hopeful that we're going to have Doug here. Doug is the person who piloted the book. You can tell it's the end of a night, of a long night.
Yes,
Over the Cliff, Gay Men and Straight Marriages, my co-partner for that book. And he'll be here to discuss the book and his own life and, you know, what led us to working together and the successes that we've had. And in a couple of weeks, we're going to have a really important show on sexually transmitted diseases with a group from California, including one of our support group members who has HIV/AIDS. And she's actually had it. She's a survivor for 22 years.
Wow.
You know, she was determined that she was not going to let that disease, you know, take her life away. And her name is Kay, and she's just a wonderful, wonderful woman, beautiful woman, too. And, you know, she's going to be here with the AIDS Services Foundation of Orange County. And we're
wonderful.
Really excited about that show.
That will be a very important show.
Very important show. So that'll be coming up in a couple of weeks. So, everyone, have a wonderful week. Try to stay cool in this horrible heat.
Mm-hmm.
And are there any final words you would like to say, Misty?
No, just good night and love to all.
All right. Good night, everybody. We'll be back here next Sunday night. Good night, Misty.
Bye-bye. Good night.
Bye-bye.